The NFL draft is in the books, and the Dynamite Sports boys are on the clock. I'm Dad with the Dynamite Sports Podcast. I'm here with my three sons, Tyler, Noah, and Trey, and they are here to walk you through the NFL draft today and some other topics. So, guys, the NFL draft has happened. We are hometown Buccaneer fans, and so the Bucs draft. How do you guys feel about the Bucs draft?
I feel like they did great.
It's a lot easier to watch the draft when your team already has all its holes filled.
And when you have Jason Light as your GM.
That too.
That tight end was really good. I'm surprised he fell.
Well, that was the last pick. But let's start back at the beginning with the first pick the Bucs took. Because the Bucs went for one of their needs right off the bat out of Duke. Graham Barton played tackle but is penciled in as a center for the Bucs.
Well, he played center in his freshman year, I believe, at Duke. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so that's where they're probably going to use him. That means all of his measurables for an interior lineman are off the charts. He has the number one relative athletic score out of any interior lineman drafted since 1987. The biggest, the strongest, the largest in terms of weight, and also the fastest. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens there.
And that's exactly what the Bucs need. We need a run game.
We need interior linemen so we can run between the tackles. It's been a real struggle for us for a very long time.
Ever since, like, Doug Martin.
And yeah. The only time we didn't struggle with that was when we had Leonard Fournette, because Leonard Fournette doesn't need an offensive line, apparently.
Yeah, and we had our mock draft last week, and we predicted Jackson Powers Johnson, who was another highly rated center. The Bucs go with Barton, and Barton gives some positional versatility, Noah.
Yeah, so he brings a lot of future hope for us. He can play from right tackle to left tackle, left guard, right guard, and center. He can play it all. In high school, he actually played tight end. So this guy is a really, really versatile player. And I posted it actually on Instagram via the Dynamite Sports Podcast, our potential offensive line. Werfs, Cody Mausch, Gadecki, Hainsey, and of course, Graham Barton. It's looking really, really high hopes for that offensive line.
He'll be a day one starter for sure.
And on day two, the Bucs came away with three more potential starters. They started off the second round with Chris Braswell, the edge from Alabama. They also drafted Tyke Smith, who many are penciling in as a starting nickel for the Bucs. And then at the third, their second third round pick was Jalen McMillan, a wide receiver that will probably be playing the slot for the Bucs next year. So, guys, how do you feel about those three picks?
I don't like Bama, but the Bucs apparently love to draft from Bama. And I'm all for it. We've had like 12 picks from Bama all time, and that's insane.
And Braswell only has the two career starts, but let's also not forget that he was sitting behind Dallas Turner, who went in the first round, and also Will Anderson, is that his name, for the Texans?
Yeah. Will Anderson, yeah. The defensive rookie of the year last year.
Yeah. So there's a reason he doesn't have the starts, but he was tied for fifth in sacks last year in the SEC.
Yeah, lots of production, and the Bucs like to rotate a lot of guys up front and keep them fresh. Of course, in the Florida Heat, that's helpful. But losing Shaq Barrett, I think this is a guy that's going to be able to come in and take a lot of those snaps.
And he's another athletic freak. He was measured at 21 miles an hour, or near 21 miles an hour, on a blocked kick return for touchdown during the season. Yeah, having freakish. That kind of speed at edge rusher is absolutely insane.
Yeah, that's
especially
wild.
At his height and weight.
Yeah, this guy is a freak athlete.
Yeah.
I think we can also end up eventually putting him at interior D-line. He did take a couple snaps also at linebackers. This guy's also another versatile player for the Bucs.
Yep. And then in Tyke Smith, he's listed as a safety. The Bucs feel like they're going to play him at nickel. And Todd Bowles definitely has a lot of familiarity with Smith because his son was playing in front of Smith as a linebacker on that Georgia defense. Smith seems to have a nose for the ball.
Shout out to Troy Bowles. Tyke Smith is a really good safety currently, and I think he'll fit in pretty well. He'll probably be a backup because we have Antoine Winfield and Jordan Whitehead starting at.
Absolutely could see him starting at nickel, though. He fits Bowles stereotypical corner, having the bigger frame and just the pure speed and ball tracking ability.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that prolific Washington offense, the first of two receivers that the Bucs draft during the week, Jalen McMillan.
He was definitely overshadowed by Romeo Odunze. I think that's why he went, fourth round?
Third round.
He also ran a 4.4.
Yeah, he's a 4.4 guy. He probably would be a starter on a mid-major team. He'll probably end up being pretty all right for the Bucks. I could absolutely see him being coming in as a day one starter out of the slot. There's not really anybody else in that room right now besides Mike and Chris. So,
yeah. They're potentially bringing in Scotty again. I've heard the rumors. Scotty Miller. Yeah, Scotty Miller.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. I didn't know you were on a first name basis. Yeah.
I wish.
Yeah, it's I wish. Scotty Miller's a pretty cool guy. Caught a touchdown in the playoffs against Green Bay. But potentially he's been seemingly working out with Baker Mayfield, so he could be coming back as well to play some more slot.
But back to the draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, Jalen McLellan's a really good receiver, and I think he'll fit in well.
And this is one of those drafts where if it weren't for it being so absolutely loaded at the top of the class, he could be a fifth wide receiver off the board.
Yeah, and don't forget, Chris Godwin was he a second or third round pick?
He was a second rounder, I believe.
No, he was a third.
Was he third?
He was in that third round list that I
And Godwin's off. In the last year of a contract. Of course, Mike Evans is aging, and no one's made a secret about that. We also have Trey Palmer coming back, who had some pretty good contributions last year. So it kind of fills out that wide receiver room for sure.
As long as Trey Palmer is angry, we'll be fine.
He woke up angry, yeah.
Good one, Trey.
That worked out really well against the Saints, huh?
So on day three, the Bucks come away with some depth, some pieces that could definitely play some roles moving forward. Oregon running back Bucky Irving, and then UTEP guard Elijah Klein, and they close out the day with another Washington receiver, this time a tight end, Devin Culp.
The Bucks have had such bad luck drafting running backs ever since like Doug Martin. Rashad White is the exception to the rule. I have high hopes for Bucky. I'm not sure how he's going to do in year one. We've seen Keyshawn Vaughn struggle in year one and two and three probably. So I think he could be a nice complement running between the tackles as a third down back for Rashad White. But I'm not super high on Bucky.
I liked the comp from when I was looking at his highlights during the offseason of work done, just the way that he runs at the ground and his pure speed. But the one thing is he gets hit and he's down. So it'll be interesting how the Bucks implement him as a new weapon.
And Bucky doesn't have that sub 4.4 speed that work done brought to the table. Mm-hmm.
The thing also that I've been seeing, Bucky Irving took a couple snaps at receiver, and he had the Tyreek Hill kind of speed when he was playing out there. Just because he's in the open field and there's nobody else that can stop that.
That's an aggressive comparison.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I don't know if he's quite Tyreek level.
I would say more like Deebo Samuel as a receiver.
But shorter.
Yes.
All right. Elijah Klein didn't get a lot of tape on him out of UTEP. UTEP ran the ball like inordinately more than any other college team. But what I noticed is that is a wide body.
Yeah.
That's a big dude.
He takes up a lot of space.
Yeah.
He looks like Cam Hayward's dad a little bit.
The Ironhead. Yeah.
Yeah. He just looks like a huge human being.
He's like the offensive fridge.
I haven't watched much of his game, but, you know, Jason Light has pretty good luck with offensive linemen, and this guy comes from a smaller school. It's Division I now, but only barely.
And, I mean, we see him draft from these smaller schools. Like, I mean, he didn't draft him, but Ryan Jensen, he went and picked up out of free agency.
Ryan Jensen's from Division III. Like, Ali Marpet's from Division III. Alex Kappa. Cody Mouch.
And they're all... have potentially been all pros or second team all pros.
And they all looked like Vikings like this guy does. Yeah. So.
Like the Rays with picking relief pitchers for the most part. No, I'm kidding. Not going to argue with Jason Light picking an offensive lineman. All right. And then the Bucks close it out with a pretty interesting athlete, Devin Culp, tight end from Washington, teammate of Jalen McMillan. The Bucks love Washington, don't they? They got Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, Vita Vea, a lot of Huskies on the team for the Bucks. So Culp, what do you guys think of his prospects as a tight end?
Well, he's a little undersized. He's 6'3", like 230, which is pretty small for an NFL tight end. But, I mean, he's got 4.4 speed at 6. That's faster than Keon Coleman, by the way, who is also 6'3". And he's also heavier. So this is definitely a freak athlete. I don't really understand how he fell.
Yeah.
I think it's because he's so very undersized.
Yeah, I think he's probably going to... I don't know that he'll be able to succeed as a tight end, but as a receiver, I got no problem with it.
Yeah, stand him up, put him in the slot. He's going to be a mass-up. He could be a matchup
mismatch. He'll be a nice complement to the tight ends the Bucs already have in the building.
He's got like a Calvin Johnson build, and I don't know how he passes
a Calvin Johnson's a little taller, but I don't disagree.
Yeah.
And he's really skinny, too. And for his height end, I'd think like big guy.
Yeah, he'll probably put on some weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Not sure how much blocking we'll get out of him, but he's an interesting matchup.
That's why we have Ko Kieft. Wears a number in the 40s and he plays tight end.
All right,
put him in the Hall of Fame already.
Ring of Honor, Ko Kieft. So leading up to the draft, Noah did a lot of research. He gave us all his sleepers in the weeks leading up to it. So right now we're going to get some top five lists out of the draft. We're going to start with Noah. He's got his top five NFL draft values, and we're going to queue up Trey as our producer for this. So get ready.
So I did have one extra guy, and he's not in my top five.
So this is an NLI, an OLI, outside looking in?
Yep, outside looking in. Future Charger, drafted in the 7th round, son of the greatest receiver ever, Brennan Rice.
Can't believe he fell that far. Yeah. I saw him as the next available, starting like the second or third round.
Gosh. Yeah, like he's so good too.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched a couple clips before, and it was comparing him catching a ball to Larry Fitzgerald and just the sound of it. Like, it sounds like he's hitting someone. Like, it's really loud.
Yeah.
Okay, number five. Guy that we had on the clock for a while. Bucks potentially were going to get him, but they did not. Pick 130 to the Ravens, TJ Tampa.
Another guy I thought they were going to get in the 3rd round. They opted instead to draft McMillan. And then he almost fell to them in the 4th round.
Yeah. I really, really wish that we got TJ Tampa just so we could have like someone with Tampa on the back. Would have
been a cool graphic.
And his jersey number was 2, Tampa 2. I mean,
yeah.
And he's from the area too.
Yeah, but he don't make it any more perfect than that.
He's not a Tampa 2 player though. He's a man-to-man corner. He's a really good corner though.
I mean, it's kind of written out for you. I don't know.
Yeah, the Bucks unfortunately don't play a lot of man, so it makes sense why they didn't pick him.
Yeah. All right, number 4 potentially was also going to be a Buck. We had him in the mock draft in the 1st round going to the Bucks. Jackson Powers Johnson, number 44, to the Raiders.
I did see a lot of concerns for him about injuries. He's had a couple concussions in the past. So I'm not sure how long he'll be able to last in the NFL, given that, you know, interior offensive linemen, they're literally banging heads with people.
Yeah,
on every down.
It'll help for them because they lost Josh Jacobs in this offseason with their run game. And he's also
they added Brock Bowers for some reason, even though they had drafted a tight end in the 1st round last year.
Part of the reason, though, that they did not pick him, the Bucks, is because he's a pass protector, and we didn't want a pass protector.
I mean, I feel like you have to draft somebody if they have a burger named after them.
Yeah. It's not a bad idea.
Quarterbacks throw touchdowns, wide receivers catch them, running backs run them in, offensive linemen get burgers named after them. quoting Jackson Powers. Thank you very much.
That's pretty good one. The episode. All right, number 3, pick 40 to the Eagles, Cooper DeJean. This guy lit the field on fire. He was really good. He'll be the first white corner in a couple of years.
If they keep him at corner.
Yeah, he'll probably play safety.
That corner room is pretty full there for the Eagles.
So. Oh, he'll be the second safety that's white, and the other guy plays for them. So,
well, I want to forget about Chris Conte, but let's not forget about Chris Conte. I watched him get murdered on a Thursday night against the Steelers live on television. It was brutal.
Yeah, it was really sad.
He got stiff arm pile drived into the floor.
Was it Pat Freiermuth right there?
It was before Freiermuth, but it was a Steelers tight end.
I remember that game. Was it the same game that like Gerald McCoy said sorry before he apologized? Yeah.
God, I miss Gerald McCoy. Shout out Gerald McCoy.
So hold on. We didn't actually say it all the way. So he apologized before hitting Ben Roethlisberger and getting a roughing the passer. That is like top 10 favorite moments of all time in the NFL.
Yeah, there are several quotes about Ben Roethlisberger towards the end of his career where players are just saying it's like hitting a glass. But when you tackle him, you just feel like he's going to break.
Jeez.
All right, number 2.
Sorry, we got a little derailed.
Sorry, guys.
Just like Chris Conte did against the Steelers on a random Thursday night. Shout out Chris Conte.
Back to the list right here. The best interior lineman in the draft went in the 2nd round. To the Commanders, Jershon Newton at pick 36. Big guy. He's not as big as the other guy that went a little bit after him. I did not mention him, though.
You have him ahead of Byron Murphy?
No. Actually, yeah, I did. I had him above Byron.
Above Byron?
Yeah. I don't Byron Murphy's
not a Byron believer.
I mean, he's really a pass rusher, and Jershon Newton does it all. Yeah, so
he's a run stopper.
That's why I like him. All right, number one, the guy that I literally cried in bed because the Bucks didn't pick him for like three nights now. Oh my God, Peyton Wilson Jr. Crying for his ACL because the Bucks would have a great linebacker right now if it wasn't for that. Gosh, he
positional value, baby,
dude. He's so good.
Where did he go?
He ended up with Steelers in the fourth round as the 98th pick. Gosh.
He's going to look good on it.
Number one on my linebacker underrated list for a reason. He ran the fastest 40 time without an ACL.
Interior linebacker, it's just one of those positions that they don't value highly. The same reason we don't value interior linemen, punters, and kickers.
Nor do they value guys that don't have ACLs in the draft.
That's true.
Which Jordan true. Travis.
Thurman Unless Thomas. It's Michael Penix.
Thurman Thomas doesn't have one. I mean, he's Hall of Famer. Like,
so, it's a different era.
They're saying that this is probably a one-contract player, which means he's only going to play for 3 or 4 years, and he'll be out of the league. They may be 3 or 4 amazing years, so we will see where they go with Peyton Devin Wilson. White. So, yes, Noah yeah, did White. Literally almost cry when each so time angry. The Bucks passed on him in the first three rounds.
He was, I mean, he's so good.
It would be really fun if you cried about that, and then Braswell and Tyke Smith and Jalen McMillan all end up in the Hall of Fame.
There you go. So let's hope for that. All right, so another top five list. So, Trey, get your finger ready again. We got Tyler now with the top five funny moments from the draft.
No OLIs, but we do have an honorable mention.
Oh, okay. Honorable mention.
Honorable mention. Certain unseasoned folks on the internet calling Cooper DeJean the white Jackie Robinson.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's brutal.
That's bad.
It's a bad look. Yeah, thank you.
Ugh. Gosh.
It's brutal. It's not. It's not. It's almost you were giving not me funny.
Something. You were giving me something happy. No,
no,
I had to.
that one's a little dark. Thank you. That one was deserved. I should honestly pay a fine.
It gets a double for a reason. Like,
all right, number five, Caleb Williams texting his new punter that they won't be punting very often. That punter was from Iowa. That's about all he did in college. He was actually an All-American at Iowa for punting, if that tells you anything about the Iowa offense.
They talk about running backs getting too many carries in college. That guy's leg might be worn out,
actually. Yeah, he might need to do hip flexors. Is there Tommy John for that? Number four, the Bucks find a tight end who runs a 4-4 in the seventh round.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing? He's not even like that undersized. Like, if he was like 6'2 or 6'1, I'd understand. But he's still 6'3. It's not... He's like Mike Evans height. Mike Evans is a big dude. Number three, Blake Corum falling into the third round.
Ow!
Combined with J.J. McCarthy going in the top 10.
I absolutely don't understand how he fell.
Also positional value, but he carried that Michigan offense.
He did.
J.J. McCarthy's going to get several million dollars more for handing it off all year.
Yeah. Oh, I was watching a J.J. McCarthy highlight reel. It was all handoffs.
Yeah.
That guy was so surprised that the Vikings didn't take Blake.
That guy
classic
was
classic Jim Harbaugh team. Run the ball, play defense.
He was born to hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley.
He really was. Number two, finding out Joel Embiid will have to score 50 points a game to win the series.
That's draft related?
Yeah. It was on Thursday night. He dropped 50 and they only won by 8. Number one. Michael Penix goes to the Falcons.
Oh, jeez.
Two quarterbacks on the roster, one ACL combined. It's not looking good.
I'm surprised you didn't mention like Sketch announcing a pick.
I mean, he didn't really do a whole lot sketch-wise. That was pretty tame for
him. No, I was waiting for him to like get down on all fours and crawl around after he named the pick, and he didn't do that, so it kind of disappointed me.
I really don't understand the Penix pick. Kirk Cousins is like 35. They signed him for 4 years. But then they do something even stupider and draft a quarterback who's 24. He'll be off of his rookie deal when he's 29 years old, and Kirk Cousins will be 40 and still playing in the NFL.
All right, guys. So I don't usually do top fives, but I've got my own top five.
Whoa. And
top,
whoa.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Let's pause.
Or do we all have a top five today?
Yeah, everybody's got a
pretty
top
much.
Five.
Oh. We're going around the table.
So mine is the top five draft classes by team. So I think there were some teams that really stood out. So number five, and as I'm reading it, I'm kind of wanting to bump them up. I'm going to go with the Washington Commanders. Washington Commanders, they started off with Jaden Daniels, who I believe is the best quarterback in this draft. I believe he's better than Caleb Williams. Then they follow up with Jajan Newton. Shout out South St. Pete, local boy. Great value at number 36. They get Mike Sanistrill, the defensive back from Michigan. Also some great value at 50. They get Ben Sinnott, who is the only fullback. They listed him at tight end. The dude's a fullback. Where's number 34? Kansas State. So wow. They get him in the fourth round. Yeah. And they come around with Luke McCaffrey also. So a great draft by the Commanders, a team that's trying to make a comeback. I was happy to see what they did.
I have a quick question before you get to your next team. Is Luke McCaffrey going to be a Mark Gasol situation or a Thanasis Antetokounmpo situation?
Also, another thing. Why are there so... This year, more than any, I think, there's a lot of players who have, like, fathers who are in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You had Terrell Owens. You had, what, Frank Gore.
It's happening in baseball, too.
Ed McCaffrey's son, Luke McCaffrey.
At one point, the entire Blue Jays roster was former MLB players.
Jerry Rice's son. And that's four. That's a lot, though.
No, and there were many more. There's a couple others I'm going to get to in my list, actually. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But to answer your question, I think he's more of an Antetokounmpo because I didn't even know he was playing college football until the pre-draft stuff started.
Well, you remember he was a quarterback before he went to Rice, mm-hmm. and they moved him to receiver.
Yeah. So my number four is the Chicago Bears. And I think going into the draft, we all knew that they were going to be winners. They get Caleb Williams, who is a great quarterback. They get Rome Odunze also as a weapon for him. And really, I mean, you could almost stop there with an outstanding draft because you've got your pitcher-catcher combination for 10 years. They also get Torrey Taylor, the punter from Iowa, who's got the worn-out leg. But you get the best punter. They come away with an offensive lineman, an edge rusher. I think they did a great job with high-value positions.
Caleb Williams, weapons-wise, is walking into one of the greatest situations any rookie quarterback has ever found himself in.
If he's not winning Rookie of the Year, I don't know what happened.
DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Odunze.
Where does he go wrong if he doesn't win?
I mean, it's going to come down to the offensive line play, but they even improved on that in the draft.
And DeAndre Swift. They added another.
They did add DeAndre Swift as well. That's right.
All right. Number three, the Philadelphia Eagles. I hate the Eagles, but the Eagles have done an awesome job of drafting. Most of that has been due to picking guys from Georgia, which they didn't do this year. But they did come away with a great draft. They knew the defensive back was an area of need. They start off with Quinyon Mitchell. They get Cooper DeJean in the second round. They get an edge rusher, and they love to trot out all kinds of freaky edge rushers. Jalix Hunt out of Houston Christian is a freaky athlete, even though he's from a really small school. Later on in the draft, they go with a legacy pick. They get Jeremiah Trotter Jr., another son of an NFL player. And later in the draft, great value. They come up with Johnny Wilson in the sixth round.
Good God, Johnny Wilson. I think he's more pro-ready than Keon Coleman is.
He's so tall.
I think Keon Coleman is going to end up being another Kelvin Benjamin, guys.
My number two team, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Thank there you. I was waiting for it. Oh. So the Steelers, they just know who they are. Like, the Steelers have been the Steelers since the 70s. They know their identity. They're gonna run the ball. They're going to play defense. And they definitely leaned into that. They get Troy Faltanu from Washington, the offensive guard. Zach Frazier from West Virginia. Two nasty maulers right up the middle that they can run behind. They get Roman Wilson, a great receiver from Michigan. Then they come back and get Peyton Wilson, the aforementioned guy without an ACL. So just a great draft by the Steelers overall, great value.
Death, taxes, and a Porter playing corner for the Steelers. Or a Trotter playing for the Eagles.
Yeah, I know. It's cool.
It's funny how that works out.
They get drafted by the team their dad played for. That's even cooler.
I'm very glad that the Steelers finally got a linebacker because that's been a hole ever since Ryan Shazier got injured.
The Bucks got a defensive end with a former Buccaneer father. But he was undrafted, so it doesn't really count.
Hanatu, yes. All right, and then the my number one is the Los Angeles Rams. they can draft. Like, I mean,
somehow they got Verse and Fisk. Are you kidding me?
And you go back to last year. I mean, they pulled Puka Nacua, who really nobody had heard about except us because he smoked the USF Bulls.
Let them get Blake Corum.
They're gonna crush Verse everyone. And Fisk are just, I mean, man,
that defensive line's gonna be lights out.
Let me go on this
real quick. Then Corum as well. So just a great draft by the Rams.
They got their replacement for Aaron Donald the year Aaron Donald left. Mm-hmm. They got their replacement for Todd Gurley finally with the 1-2 punch of Kyren Williams and Blake Corum, and now they have Braden Fisk as well on that D-line. They're going to crush at everything this
year. I mean, you could give McVay a random group of 22 men, and he'd still find a way to win an NFL game. So,
all right. And then finally, one other thing that I just want to point out is I've got my deep, deep sleeper of the draft, guys. All right. No, I knew you did a lot of research. I did no research, but I'm just going on my own belief system. All right. So my deep, deep sleeper is a running back out of Louisville named Isaac Guerrero. He was drafted by the 49ers.
Oh, gosh.
He's going to run for 4,000 yards next year.
Oh, no.
This guy had 800 yards at Louisville, but put him down for 1,212 touchdowns this season because the Shanahans are going to ride that guy for 2 years, and then he's going to be done.
Then he's going to have some horrifying knee injury.
They're going to be the very first 8,000-yard team.
The first minute of that game, Christian McCaffrey's tearing his ACL.
Whoa.
I'm not trying to predict injuries for anybody here. Hold on.
And that guy's rushing for 70,000 yards.
We are jinxing it right now.
All right. So those are my top fives, all right? So NFL draft was fun. We had a great time watching it. But there were some other things that went on in and around the world of sports. Not really on the field, but something that interests us a lot are some uniform reveals. And so Trey's got a top five because the NFL team, there were some new NFL reveals. And so Trey's going to go with his top five NFL uniform sets.
I am a uniform enthusiast. I love the aesthetic of uniforms, and I just can't explain it. But so number five, I'm sure you guys have not heard of this one, but the Eagles.
Yeah, I know about
that.
They
changed the font right here. Yeah. They made it a little simpler. That's literally it. I don't think it was that necessary.
Wow. I can see why they're five.
Yeah, it's literally nothing.
I think that was.
Did they keep the Kelly Green though?
Yes.
Okay. Thank goodness.
That was gotta keep that.
We
need a Kelly Green orange creamsicole. Jersey matchup.
Yes.
God, that would be beautiful. We need throwback games. Like, remember in 2017 where we had color rush games?
Everyone wore their throwbacks for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that was the first change of the NFL offseason was the Eagles changing their uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, the Broncos. So they would be last if the Eagles didn't change their font.
That's brutal.
But, oh my God.
Wow.
What in the Blue Mountain State are those uniforms?
What a reference. I didn't know you knew what that was.
I did know what that was.
Wow.
That looks... It's... I'm so confused. You somehow downgraded one of the most needed uniform changes ever.
They just need to go back to what they wore in the 90s
with John Elway.
Say that again, Ty.
Just go back to what they wore in the 90s with John Elway.
Yeah, I was hoping it would at least be a callback to that, kind of like the white ice helmets that they did this year. I mean, those were still a little disappointing, but like I thought they took a step back when they went to the uniforms they had. I feel like this is another step back.
So another thing, one of their uniform sets is a white helmet in a blue color rush, and I don't like that. I don't like that teams.
They're just going to look like the Colts.
I don't like that teams that are doing a different color helmet with the color rush. That doesn't look right to me.
It's just kind of weird. You're right.
It really doesn't. And then, number three, the Jets.
That rebrand, I was actually pretty okay with.
It was okay. Yeah. It was a little bit too simple. I know that they're doing the throwbacks, but I don't know. Maybe
it's the first time they've actually had a jet in their logo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's always just been a football.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with a jet.
I think I like this one. I think this one is pretty good.
I just expected something a little bit more complicated. I don't know. I guess it didn't meet my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Number two, the Lions. God, okay, so this one is carried by those black color rushes. Those look so good with the blue helmet.
Let me give you a great story about this. Dan Campbell, when he signed with the Lions, said, "I want black uniforms." The owner's deal with him that he made in a contract was that you win the division, I give you black uniforms.
That's a crazy clause. Not the craziest ever, but it's up there.
Number one.
But I will say, before you go to number one,
sorry,
they trotted out Barry Sanders in one of the old but new but old blue uniforms because they went basically back to like his era, and he just looked resplendent on stage in that blue number 20.
So it's the happiest I've ever seen him.
Something I like about these uniforms is that the face mask is a different color than the rest of the helmet. because I've seen mm-hmm. plenty of teams do this where they have the face mask is the same color as the helmet, and it just doesn't look good. It looks boring almost.
Mm-hmm.
So that just makes it stand out. I don't know. And then number one is the Texans.
God! Yeah, that's gonna be this good, is, nice to look this at.
This is
on the
this
field.
Is this is care this this number one is carried by the alternates, and the other two aren't that bad either. Let's start with the red ones. Those look phenomenal.
Yeah,
I've waited so long for them to have the horns out of the helmet,
like the Vikings do,
like the Vikings yeah. and the Eagles
They've
do.
They've needed to do that for a while.
They have, and it looks so cool. But the H-Town ones look amazing. I can't. The blue is so nice. It's so good. And then the owner of the Texans posted on his Instagram a picture of him with his dog and an H-Town chain on his dog.
Oh,
that's it so looks, cool. It is quite cool.
H-Town's a cool name for Houston.
It is. Yeah.
Well, I'll be the old man in the room and say I don't like the H-Town uniform. I think it looks like the XFL team.
That's like, honestly a fair critique. They do have the one like powder blue, I believe, that kind of looks like the Oilers a little bit.
Yeah,
the
Renegades, I like that. Or something.
Yeah.
I wish Tennessee would give them back their powder blue. That the world would be right then.
Yeah, that's yeah. true.
All right. Well, I've got my own uniform take too. Look at me, I'm full of takes this week.
Wow. Yeah. Take machine.
Yeah. yeah. So City Connect jerseys.
Oh boy.
Are terrible. I want to turn on a baseball game and I want to be able to look within 5 seconds and determine what teams are playing.
Wow, this is kind of a boomer take, actually.
But when Boston is wearing powder blue and yellow,
that
no, you're right about that
me.
One. That one's bad.
There are some really bad.
The Mets are wearing concrete. It's not pretty.
No,
the ones I like are the Miami ones with the blue and red because that's kind of cool. But then the Rays released theirs today.
I know, and I wanted to set you guys up for that because I know you guys were pumped.
It was beautiful.
The Vassallo text messages were blowing up.
I want one so bad. I might have to drop the $130 or whatever it is for a cheap jersey.
They made us excited about the Rays because they are terrible. They were swept by the White Sox. The White Sox now have 4 wins.
6.
And 3 of them.
Yeah, they were 3-22 going into that series. The White Sox are now 6-22.
Speaking of the White Sox, brutal. I do like those City Connects.
The White Sox have pretty nice ones. The Reds are pretty all right as well.
I like the Reds
but
ones.
But other than that.
What was the take you found, Tyler, about why the Rays City Connects are so good? Like, what do they appeal to again?
They appeal to everyone who is a sports fan in America because we all look like manatees, and that's the logo for the City Connect. between the new sports heads and the 45-year-old Tampa dads, I believe, was the direct text of the tweet.
Hold on. I feel seen.
If you...
You're the target demographic, actually.
If you have a logo on your jersey where your mascot is on a skateboard, it is like top 10 uniforms of all time.
I stand with Skate Ray. That guy's Skate cool. Ray
is or immaculate.
The pelican with the star eyes.
Oh my god.
Purple and green.
I'm glad they added that because I was waiting for something Saint Pete.
Even the lettering with the flames. Oh, beautiful.
Randy Orozarena's got to come out on a bike.
I might buy a jersey for every single player on the roster.
I have another take about City Connect uniforms. Have you guys seen the Philadelphia Phillies ones?
Well, hold on. Let's finish with the Rays first.
Okay, I'm sorry. We'll go back to that. Sorry.
We'll come back to the Phillies.
Bookmark it.
I don't want to talk about Philadelphia sports most times, but now I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that they pulled in the lime green. The belts are like lime green.
They even shaped the manta ray on the front like the Skyway Bridge. I thought that was a pretty cool reference as well.
Yeah, and there's a mural near our house that for the last like 4 years has been Tom Brady. And the other day we drove by and there were like these skaters in blue. And we were like, what is that all about?
What's that?
Yeah, and it's a mural for the City Connect that they were releasing. There's also going to be a big party on Thursday downtown at the pier with players making appearances. And I'm sure they will have the merch on sale. So I'll have to hold on to Tyler's wallet so he doesn't spend all of his money.
Yeah. You don't know where the gold is buried. It's okay.
So how about we talk about bad ones now? I think we've done enough good City. We've talked about enough good City Connect jerseys.
Yeah, the two of them.
Well, I think there's a few more, but I want to talk about the Phillies.
You got to fill me in on the colors. I don't watch many Philadelphia Phillies games.
Hold on, I have to show you. Hold on.
You're going to show us? So this is a I'm podcast. Going to,
the Philadelphia,
this is a podcast. Yes.
The Philadelphia Phillies.
You have to do some describing.
I gotcha.
Okay.
The Philadelphia Phillies City Connect jerseys came out a couple weeks ago. They had a big premiere similar to the Rays one. I personally did like them because they kind of showed the city. And they brought some of the colors of other...
Do they have Rocky Balboa standing at the top of the stairs with his arms in the air?
They should. That should be a perfect
Philadelphia. It's not there?
Okay.
No.
Then I don't care. I pulled
that up. That's Philly City.
I pulled that up.
Okay. That's all I need from Philly.
Oh, wait.
What the heck is that? None of those are Philly's colors.
That looks like the Jacksonville Jaguars playing baseball. That's what it looks like
to me. It looks like if the Jacksonville...
That's exactly my argument about City Connect. So call me a boomer all you want, but that's ridiculous.
Those look like 76ers, like... fake jerseys. Like if somebody was faking a 76ers rebrand, that's what those jerseys would look like.
It looks like if the Jaguars like somehow mix their jerseys with like a little league softball team.
They kind of look like Mariners jerseys. Why? None of these colors are Philadelphia colors.
I hate most about it. So I don't know if you guys have heard of the poop game in baseball.
I have.
Where the Pirates play the Phillies, and if it's 0-0, it spells out
poop at the beginning of the game. Yeah.
But you didn't know about the poop game?
No.
The poop game is one of my favorite sports. They play each other every year just for the poop game.
Yes. Okay. The MLB took that away because of the new logo. They took away the poop game.
They did take away the poop game for City Connects. They've also changed the score bug a couple years so that it just says Oppo instead of poop, and it's pretty boring. So I'm anytime the MLB makes a change at this point, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
The jersey swaps, the City Connect tradition now. I don't know what we're doing over there.
I will say I am glad though that the Pittsburgh Pirates City Connects are yellow and black.
If I see a Pittsburgh sports team in any other colors, I'm immediately confused because why?
That's not Pittsburgh.
Even the Penguins wear yellow and black. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, the whole city is yellow and black. Like,
I mean, you go there and that's actually what everything is.
Every car should be Bumblebee.
Instead of black and white, everything's yellow and black.
Yeah.
Right. All right, guys. We're running out of time, but I have to go back and hit one possible sore spot for everybody.
All right.
The Miami Heat. Is it time to write an obituary?
They're only down by three.
Noah had
right
them
now.
In the finals. Tyler is a
I
ride
knew
or
this
die.
Was coming. I mean, they're only down a game right now. They're playing at the Kaseya Center as we speak, and they're only down three.
Let me say something.
That's what I've been doing for the past 10 podcast minutes is watching the beginning of this game.
All right. The Miami Heat should never, ever be doubted because you can doubt them at any time.
It's hard not to doubt them without Jimmy or their primary scorer for like the last month.
Here we go. I'm going to take a little bit of time. Oh, we got about 2 minutes. Let me go. Oh my gosh. Caleb Martin, first off. He's been crushing
it. He only plays against the Celtics.
I mean, yeah, he only plays against the Celtics. And
he makes $8 million a year to beat the Celtics in the playoffs.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's insane. On a good day, Tyler Herro makes 60% of his three-pointers.
So, on a good day, he looks like Magic Johnson. On a bad day, he looks like Rip Hamilton at the end of his career.
Bam Adebayo can guard anyone in the league.
I'll stand by that one. That's true. He should be defensive player.
He should be the defensive player of the year, no doubt. And I think that he will lock up Tatum in any game. That's why Tatum isn't their main scorer right now.
Tatum is only putting up like 20 points a game.
So yeah.
That's a win.
Yeah.
But we're still losing by 20. So.
But the problem with the Heat right now is we're relying on Nikola Jovic for our main offensive plays, which is not where it should be going.
That's not true. We're relying on Tyler Herro, and he's shooting 7 of 20
every night. But like, Jovic, I keep watching it, and it's Jovic 3, and like, Herro missed. Like,
well, Herro, if he's going to score 21 points, he's going to do it on 20 shots. That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
The only efficient nights are when he has 14 assists, and we're hitting 53% of our threes and shooting over 40 of them. So, I think that this series is probably over, but I'm still not willing to put the nail in the coffin.
All right, so these guys are hoping for a miracle and hoping for another moment where Mike Breen can lean back and scream into the microphone.
Ah!